From the sports desk of the Ames Tribune, Ames, Iowa, the home of the Cyclones. This is the Cyclone Slant. With sports editor Travis Hines. Now, the Cyclone Slant.
Hello and welcome to the Cyclone Slant podcast brought to you by Ames Ford Lincoln. I am Ames Tribune sports editor Travis Hines, joined this week, Iowa State Texas football week, by staff writer and Iowa State football beat writer Dylan Montz. Dylan, what's up?
Not a lot. A lot to get to here with football game coming up, but a big week for Iowa State.
Is it fair or accurate or both to say this is the biggest football game in the history of Iowa State football, all 130 years of it?
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's posed the question like that in terms of the entire history. Certainly in the last two decades, probably it's been like that. I would probably lean it is, just with the modernization that the game has gone through and kind of the stakes and all that goes with it. I think it probably is. And when you're facing a team like Texas, one of the blue bloods in the sport, even though they haven't been
Texas is still Texas, regardless.
Not in the upper echelon, maybe, of the Alabamas, Oklahomas, but they're still Texas. So when you kind of put, and then it's a top 20 matchup too. I mean, there's just a lot that's going into it. So I'd say with the stakes that are in place right now, it probably is the biggest in history.
Lay out the stakes. I think everybody listening to this podcast probably knows what's on the line for Iowa State going into Austin, but kind of lay it out just so we're all on the same page. And I think hearing it kind of reinforces just how big the game is.
Yeah, so a win for Iowa State would obviously keep them on track for a Big 12 championship game berth, which they've not gone to a conference championship game. And I think even when they won their last conference title in 1912, it wasn't in a conference championship.
Yeah, I think they played four games, and they actually split it with Nebraska, if I remember looking up those old newspaper articles.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So you have that.
I think it was contested even. Like, Nebraska says they want it. Iowa State says they want it.
What a wild time back in the early 20th century.
Don't mess with the early 20th century football.
Yeah. And then it'd give them their sixth straight win, which has never happened in a season. Six Big 12 win in a row.
Six straight wins has never happened.
I think in the Big 12. I'd have to go back and double check it, but I know for sure in the Big 12 they never had six straight wins.
Is five tied a record or is a record?
The one that five tied a record, but it was a record for one
Big
12, season, because they've had it before, but it spanned two seasons.
Gotcha.
So there's that, and then even if they didn't make the Big 12 championship game, because that's still possible, even if they went out, they could be on track for 9 wins, 10 wins, if they keep winning. So I mean, there's just a lot that goes into it again and they've kind of creeped up the rankings, and I think it's been pretty incredible to watch given the way they started the season.
Yeah, I mean, what's on the table right now, regardless of the Big 12 title game machinations, given that they can still win and miss out, is still they can be the most accomplished football team in Iowa State history, right? I mean, you can easily make that argument if they went out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you can look back at some of the other teams. The 2000 team went 9-3. They didn't play the gauntlet of a schedule that Iowa State does. That you can avoid Texas and Oklahoma in those early years of the Big 12. 2005, kind of the same thing. I don't think they played Texas or Oklahoma that year. So when you talk about kind of going for that same mark and you have to play everybody, it kind of creates some new dynamics to the season and certainly kind of ups the ante a little bit.
Yeah, and if they win this game, I mean, probably shouldn't count Kansas State as a victory yet given the history there, but man, that does not look like a good football team in Manhattan. But if they win this football game, you're looking at potentially the first Big 12, the first conference title game ever. You have the first conference championship since before World War I available to you, and you have the first ever January bowl game still available to you if you're Iowa State and you win on Saturday.
Yeah, again, it's kind of I think people saw the second half of this season as an opportunity to kind of go and put yourself in a good spot to get back to a bowl game and have a solid season. But that's kind of where it comes back to beating Oklahoma State on the road, who's obviously had an up and down season. Then taking care of West Virginia at home, it finishing that first half of the schedule at 3-3, it really set you up to make some sort of nice run. And so I think that's kind of, you know, they found a rhythm, and obviously Brock Purdy coming in has been kind of the game changer and the one thing you can point to. But I think there's just been, you know, improvements across the board in the defense has kind of obviously done what it's needed to.
So we set the stage and laid out the stakes. Let's talk about the game now. Give me your 90-second scout here.
Yeah, Texas, obviously, with Sam Ehlinger, I think he's kind of come into his own and been really solid. And he kind of provides similar problems that Charlie Brewer did from Baylor, where he can kind of beat you with his feet a little bit if he has to. So I think that having that Baylor game and some of the defensive woes at times where Baylor was able to get chunk yardage in the middle of the field, through the pass or the run, I think it kind of gives Iowa State a blueprint on things it needs to clean up, what it has to do. Unlike Baylor, though, Texas has some pretty big wide receivers with Lil Jordan Humphrey, Duvernay, Colin Johnson is not. They're kind of the three part of their three-headed monster. It sounds like he could be maybe not available, but they have a lot of weapons on the outside. And so I think that's kind of where Texas poses the most problems, because the defense has kind of been up and down a little bit for them. But they have a lot of ways to be on offense. So the defense is going to have to play well. And then offensively, you know, you need to find a rhythm without David Montgomery in the first half. What running back is going to fill that role? To what success level? How much is Brock Purdy going to have to do? The wide receivers are obviously going to have to step up. So there's some interesting components to this game on both sides.
Let's start on the offensive end for Iowa State. David Montgomery, as you mentioned, is going to miss the first half after getting tossed from the Baylor game for throwing a punch. It was a retaliatory punch, but a punch nonetheless. I'm of the belief that this is not going to be that big of a deal for Iowa State. And I could be wrong in there, where you look at the stats of Nwangu Lang and Crony. Their yards per carry are not very good, but I think that they are talented. So I feel like it's something that can be overcome. And I also feel like Iowa State's offense has been the best it's been when it's throwing the ball early. I think back to the Oklahoma game. I think back, what was the game? It was at Kansas where Butler went for two touchdowns in the first quarter.
Right.
I think that's been when the offense has been at its peak, is when it's throwing the ball early. So I don't think it's that big a deal, but I could be talked into the fact that missing your top running back, who is probably your top pro prospect and, you know, maybe one of the, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 best running backs in the country, probably not ideal. So, I mean, where do you land on the significance of being without him for the first half?
It's somewhat significant in terms of it can kind of keep the defense honest, because what Brock Purdy back there and his ability to run or obviously throw really kind of opens things up. But having David Montgomery back there just creates a little bit more of misdirection. And his ability to break tackles and all that is certainly, you know, it just opens things up so much more. So it's going to be interesting to see if they do go to the air early, like you mentioned. I think they'll probably have to somewhat. But I think Kanae Nwangu has shown flashes at times in his ability to hit the edge and showcase his speed. Johnny Lang is a little bit of a different back, shifty, can kind of slip in between the tackles a little bit. And then Crony is more of a catching pass-catching running back. So I think they'll probably go with Nwangu early. And if he can kind of find some sort of rhythm and keep the defense off balance, then I think you know, you should be smooth sailing the rest of the half. But I wouldn't be surprised if Iowa State went to the air a little bit more, just to it'd be a case of setting passing to set up the run.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they navigate it, because it's weird to introduce that kind of player at halftime too. Like, oh, okay, now we got David back, and you know, there's been 30 minutes of football already of guys finding a rhythm and offense trying to find its footing, and then you're kind of switching it up at halftime. Obviously, that's a positive development for Iowa State, but it's still a change, something different than they've had to navigate before. So it'll be interesting to see how Campbell does it. I'll be interested to hear, you know, probably I don't think we're getting Campbell again before the game. So after the game, if he's consulted with other coaches that have maybe had to deal with this, or I'm trying to remember, he hasn't mentioned having to deal with this in the past, because it's certainly becoming more common with the targeting rules where you're having guys missing half games. So it'll be interesting, because it's certainly something different. I can't remember Iowa State being in a situation like this, certainly not with a player of Montgomery's caliber.
Yeah, I don't even know if I remember somebody missing a half for targeting either.
That's what I don't remember.
The fighting's definitely, but the targeting, I can't even remember when it is. But the one thing that I think Iowa State does have kind of in its favor at this point in the season is they have played without Montgomery before. They were without him against Oklahoma State. And I think the offensive line has continued to improve even from then. And they're certainly not perfect, and you can kind of pinpoint to some penalties at times that have killed drives. But overall, I think that group is in a lot better shape than what it was earlier in the year. And I think that's just due to, I think, 6 or 7 games in a row they've had that same starting five now. And they have rotations at times, but really it's been kind of that group that's run with it. So I think having that stability there, plus Purdy now going into his 6th game as kind of the guy, that kind of helps you tread water a little bit without a guy like Montgomery.
The other side of the ball, you mentioned Ellinger at quarterback for Texas. They put up some points against Texas Tech over the weekend and still almost lost that game. That was a weird finish to that game. But what's the challenge here for an Iowa State defense that has really been up to every single challenge that it's faced this season?
I think it's continuing to find ways to rush the passer a little bit, but also have solid coverage in the back end. Like I mentioned, they have some pretty big wide receivers, and Lil Jordan Humphrey, he had the game-winning touchdown at Texas Tech, just caught it right over the guy and fell into the end zone. So Peavy's going to have a good day. It sounds like he's been banged up a little bit, but has kind of powered through some things. Datron Young is still questionable for the game on Saturday. It sounds like his shoulder injury is not quite where they want it to be, so you'll see probably a lot of Anthony Johnson. You'll have Braxton Lewis, Greg Eisworth in the back end. So, I mean, you have some guys that have played a lot of snaps this year, but it's more important even in a game like this to stay assignment sound, play your zones, and kind of make life as tough as possible on those guys, bump them on the routes and things like that.
I think we're both probably in agreement this is going to be a nip and tuck game. You thinking it's going to be close?
Oh, absolutely.
Does that make you nervous if you're Matt Campbell, given what you've seen out of your special teams this year?
Probably a little. If it's a 35-yard field goal and in a situation like that, you probably feel all right. If it's 35 to 40, or if it's more than 40, I think you're probably really concerned.
Are you just talking about Asawe making it, or are you worried about getting the thing blocked? I mean, they've already had one field goal blocked. I think that was outside 35.
Yeah, that was a longer one. They're both concerning. And a field goal can be blocked for so many reasons. Who knows if the kick was low? I still haven't really seen or heard, or I don't probably know enough about it, but I think there'd be a lot of things concerning. Even you're probably gonna have to score a lot in a game like this, but even if you don't, you're gonna need a guy like Corey Dunn to be really on point to flip the field and make it even more tough on Texas. So there's a lot that goes into it. You're gonna have to be solid in your return game with Kanaan Awangu and Tariq Milton. There's a lot of components to it, so that group is probably gonna have to have its best game of the year too.
Nwangu seems to be, to me, the only guy that's been consistent.
Right.
You know, that kick return has been the only consistent phase of special teams this year. I mean, we've seen problems with punt, which probably don't get as much attention as they deserve given how up and down Dunn's been, and then obviously the punt blocked. Was that against West Virginia?
Texas Tech. That just puts so much pressure on the defense to then come up with big stops. But he's going to have to play as well as he has all year, and I think he's been consistent at times, but then you'll get like a 15-yard punt or a 22-yard punt. It just is all over the place. And
there's no such thing as being consistent at times.
Well, in game, I guess consistent from sometimes he'll be consistent.
Sometimes he can be good.
Yeah, sometimes he can be good. It kind of depends.
It's just
on the
a matter
game.
Of time until he's not. Seems to be the problem.
Right. Yeah. It's seems like it's gone game to games. Some games he'll be fine. Some games he'll have good punts and then shank some. So you can't have any in this kind of game.
Yeah. So if I'm Campbell, I'm worried about punt. I'm worried about field goals. And I know you probably, once one vulnerability is exposed, as they were for the kick and the punt, you usually fix that pretty quickly. And so I'd be surprised to see that revisited. But, you know, there's always the case of if there's one weak spot, is there two? And we just haven't seen it yet. And I think, you know, that's the doomsday scenario. But I think the bigger issue is that inconsistency from Dunn. It is the fact that you can't really trust Asawe. Asawe? Asali?
Asali.
to make much beyond, you know, what would be considered mostly gimmies at this point. And maybe they're just going to have to score touchdowns anyway. It's going to probably be a high-scoring game. But if you don't feel confident in that phase of the game, I think when you're talking about margins in a game that I think everyone expects to be close, I think you got to be a little bit. It wouldn't shock me if that's a thing keeping Matt Campbell up at night this week.
Yeah, and the thing with punting too is, given where they are in the field, he's shown he's not afraid to go for it in situations too. And that in the first half, that's where it'd be nice to have a guy like Montgomery. But I wouldn't be surprised, given kind of the no man's land, if they're more inclined to go for it.
You don't think they'll be punting from the 34?
I know that's what we love and talk about all the time, but I think they'll probably be a little bit more aggressive than some other times where you would see a punt from the 34.
It was Baylor that punted from the 31 last week, right?
Yeah.
That was just last week?
Yep.
31-yard line. And I know it was like fourth and forever, but man.
Football, baby.
Punt to win. What would be the thing that wouldn't... I was going to say, what would be the surprise that wouldn't surprise you, but that's a pretty dumb way to phrase a question. So what could be a thing that we haven't seen from Iowa State consistently or at all this year that you think maybe shows up and decides a game?
Oh, man. I think they haven't probably turned people over as much as they have all year.
I
think that's probably something that could show up. With that three-man front, the pass rush they've been able to get, you know, you look last week, Matt Leo had a near sack. It could have been, you know, a big loss. Could have Jaquan Bailey had some opportunities. Orion Vance, I think, had Brewer. You're right there with those guys. There's opportunities to lodge the ball loose. And with the way Texas is probably going to air it out a little bit, and given what the secondary is going to have to do in their coverage, there's going to be opportunities to turn them over a little bit. And I think that's something that last year's team did well for most of the season. This year's team, you haven't seen it quite as much, but I think just given how much offense there's going to be, there's a lot more room for error if you're Texas and even if you're Iowa State at times.
What's the vulnerability that we've seen from Iowa State that they've been able to overcome the last 5 weeks that you could see potentially doing them in Austin?
I think it's probably been some of their penalties and drive killers at times. You've seen false starts that kind of push you back into the second and long. And that's kind of where people talked about it earlier in the year with Matt Campbell and his play calls. There's not really any good looks when you're second and long, and the offensive line was just all over the place with their mistakes and pushing back, whether it's false starts, holds, whatever it was. But I think, I'm not saying there's chances to revert that, but just that's
those areas. Can be more costly than
those
they
can
have
be
been.
More costly than they have been, just given how much offense is probably going to be featured in this game and some of the looks that Texas is maybe going to do to try to confuse Purdy or disguise some things.
What about the offensive line? Is that are we buying improvement there, or is that something that could spell disaster?
I think it's natural that they've improved some, and I think that's familiarity. I'm not ready to call that a strength of the team by any means. So I think there's ups and downs with that group, and I think that people have kind of talked about this as being another step. I think next year could be their best offensive line they've had under Campbell, just given some of the younger guys that'll be able to grow up in that system. Julian Good-Jones, Bryce Meeker will be seniors. Josh Kniff will be a senior. So they're not there yet, and they've gotten better, but that's probably somewhere where you have some concern, especially with Al Montgomery, because he can cover up mistakes. But I think Purdy has kind of been able to cover up some of that at times too, just with his legs.
All right, script the game. How are you seeing it unfold, and who is victorious on Saturday evening, late evening probably?
Yeah, I think there will be a lot of offense. It's going to come down to kind of who can connect the most. I think big plays can certainly be a factor too. I think Texas edges Iowa State.
Why?
Well, I think they'll be able to hit on offense with more regularity than Iowa State will.
I'm going the other way. I think Iowa State is going to win. I believe in that defense. I'm less sold on the offense, but they keep doing it every week, at least well enough to win. And I haven't seen the the risky throws that you would expect for Purdy that you've seen Iowa State quarterbacks who have success early get away with, and then it comes back to bite him. I haven't seen him making those throws. I mean, he had the one throw in the back of the end zone against Baylor last week that wasn't so much risky as it was like, holy hell, how did he get that in that window for that touchdown? And I just, to me, it's the defense being as good as it's been, and if it can generate a takeaway or two, I think you're looking at maybe a 10 or 14 point win for Iowa State, just because I think you know, that'll be that important to get stops, because I don't know how much Texas's defense is going to be able to slow Iowa State. I'm bought into the defense. I think the defense is elite. I think the offense is pretty good, and I think when you have those two together, if we're going to ignore the, just, you know, kind of like cover our eyes when it comes to special teams for Iowa State, I think that's enough to win against a Texas team that don't particularly like that much, that doesn't seem, I don't know, I just don't get a sense that they're super focused, that they're all together. And that's totally armchair psychologist, body language doctor from Central Iowa watching on TV and reading you know, what they're saying in the media. So I could be completely off base there, but I just, and I get the exact opposite feel from being up close to Iowa State, that they're locked in and playing their best football. So I'm not going to bet against Iowa State at this point, against a Texas team that I'm not enamored with.
Yeah, I don't love Texas either, but I think the one thing that concerns me with the defense is how much they were able to give up. And I mean, you got to give them credit too, because Baylor was able to.
Do we have to give them credit though? That felt like a lot of Baylor more than Iowa State in the red zone.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Then I think I don't see Texas making as many problems like that. And if they're able to kind of carve up the middle of the field, work with tempo, as good as the Iowa State defense is and has been, that's concerning to me. And yeah, I don't know how quick that is, how quick a fix that is in a week, because I think you've seen that at other times this year too, where teams have been able to move the ball through the middle of the field. And I think that's kind of the one thing with the defense is you have that three-man front up top. You have the three high safeties and kind of that cloud coverage in the back. There's all this room in the middle of the field. If you can get one guy to slip out of the slot behind the linebackers, or if Ellinger can kind of make one or two quick steps, there's a lot of room to work, and I think it kind of keeps the defense off balance. So that would be my one concern. But if Iowa State can keep it, you know, within striking distance, if it's a close game, obviously you like their chances too, just given kind of what they've been able to do all year.
All right, Saturday night, 7 p.m., Longhorn Network. Do we have to tell people how to watch the game? I feel like that's been like the number two talker all week, is how the hell do you watch the Longhorn Network?
I wrote about it on the website.
Yeah, go to aimstrip.com, and then you'll figure it out. Do we need to talk any more about this game, or we got it covered?
I think we covered it pretty well. And again, I think it's going to be fascinating to kind of see how this Iowa State team comes out because of, you know, of everything at stake. And I just talking to those guys this week, and you wrote about it, they don't really buy into anything like that. You can ask, you know, what does this game mean in a million different ways, and nobody really talks about it. It's kind of been business.
And you can tell when that's BS too.
Sure.
Like, we've been like, you can tell when guys are just like, when the media, when the PR guys tell them, or the coaches tell them right before they come talk to us, here's what you say to this question. You can tell when it's disingenuous. I don't get that sense. And again, that's, you know, body language doctor over here, but I just, that seems to be the character of this team more than the thing that we're supposed to say if you're them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Should we talk some hoops?
Let's do it.
Iowa State has avoided catastrophe despite having two guys suspended and two guys hurt. Most importantly, I mean, four really important players in Lindell Wigginton and Solomon Young out with injury, and then two other important players in Cameron Lard and Zoran Talley continuing to be suspended. They kicked the hell out of Missouri on Friday, which was, you know, A, good for them, but B, oh my God, is Missouri bad. Like,
oh, brutal.
I feel bad not being like giving Iowa State enough, like a lot of credit for withstanding of the adversity that they ran into with those suspensions and then the injury to Wigginton. But man, Missouri was bad. Like, the 25 turnovers they had, I bet 19 were on them and not Iowa State forcing them.
Tillman wasn't very.
Jeremiah Tillman was incredibly underwhelming. I mean, Iowa State was asking to get burned on those double teams in the post, and he just could not do it. So yeah, I would like to give Iowa State credit because they were in a bad spot, and I do give them credit, but man, Missouri was bad. And I wish Missouri was better just so we'd have a better idea of what Iowa State's going to be, because we didn't see it against Alabama State. Texas Southern was totally overmatched on Monday night. So we're kind of going, we're flying blind going into Maui, I think. But you got to give Iowa State credit. They're 3-0. You can't do better than 3-0. Maybe that changes this week in Maui. Without like, if Iowa State was at full strength, I'd like them to beat Arizona. Obviously not Gonzaga, even if they don't have Killian Tilly in that second round, but I'd like them to beat Arizona. I don't know that I like them to beat Arizona now. I know I don't. And then potentially in that second round, I think it's maybe a coin flip against Illinois, who did not look good against Georgetown on Tuesday night, but they looked fun and they could score the basketball. And they're a little bit older than Iowa State, but not much. So I think that's a coin flip game. But I'm excited to see them against real competition, to see at least what this group's about, to see what the four freshmen. And I mean, that's the other disappointing thing from an outside observer's perspective about these suspensions and the injuries. Like, we're not going to have any damn idea what Iowa State basketball is all about. I mean, potentially until the middle of January, because you're probably not going to be at full strength until, I mean, depending on when Solomon Young comes back, you know, maybe mid-December. Give a couple of weeks for everybody to get acclimated, and then, you know, you're 2 weeks into Big 12 play before I think you really have a great idea. So that's the disappointing part, is somebody that's not particularly interested in the wins and losses, but what the character and the metal and the strategies and the look of the team is. But it's going to be, I think, interesting to see this team now go against some real to good competition in Maui.
This middle of January feels like forever from now.
I know, but like, you look at especially their schedule, they don't play from December 21st until January 2nd. So right. If Solomon Young ain't back by, right. I mean, if for sure. Even Lindell Wigginton, I know they're hopeful that he'll be back, but like, there's not that many games in December this year. I mean, they're done in December by December 21st. I think they've got four games. I'd have to go look. I know they got North Dakota State on the 3rd. Iowa on the 7th, and then a couple more before they head off to break and then into the new year with Big 12. So like, that's not a lot of time to get acclimated. And that's still only a few games for Cameron Lard and Zoran Talley to get, you know, up to speed too. And that's assuming, which there's no indication otherwise, but that's assuming they're back December 3rd against North Dakota State.
Right. And Lindell Wigginton, when he talked to you guys the other way, he said he had no interest in rushing, obviously. I mean, so the hope is that it would be early December, but then, you know, I'm sure there's wiggle room a little bit. But, yeah, it'll take time to kind of get everybody into their roles and into the flow of things.
Yeah, I mean, in the injury for Wigginton,
he's still in his hard cast.
He's in a hard cast for a week. They don't go into a boot for a week, and then it's kind of wait and see, and that's if everything goes right. You know, my understanding of the foot strain is it's something akin to plantar fasciitis. It's not plantar fasciitis. It is a strain. It's where all the muscles come together in the heel of the foot, it sounds like, and there's just a tear there, which, you know, a strain is a tear. It's a low-grade tear that's considered a strain. It's like, who was it? Your boy Kyle Orton got all that crap for not playing through a strain. It's like a strain is a tear, just not a terrible one.
Yeah.
So, like, that's why they made it. That's why they kind of went into emergency mode and hard casted Wigginton, because he just needs to be off it and have that thing immobilized for it to get better. So it'll really come down to just healing. And it's not so much, I think, a pain tolerance thing that you get with some other injuries because of what you mentioned. Like, it would be reckless of him, and it would be unfair of the coaching staff to put him out there and let that injury get worse, where it's going to affect his pro career. Because, you know, that's he came back. Sure, he wants to win at Iowa State and play great basketball and have a great collegiate experience, but he came back to make his draft stock go higher.
Right.
I mean, like, that's priority, you know, one, and winning is 1A, I guess. You know, they're not, they work in concert with each other. So, you know, it's a thing where, you know, if it was Hans Brace a year ago and it's February, you'd probably say, it's up to you, Hans. Do you want to keep going and just play through this pain? And maybe he says yes, maybe he doesn't. But that's my understanding of the injury, is that they just need that thing to heal, you know, so he's good to go moving forward and it's not lingering or get worse. Kind of went off on a tangent there, but Maui should be fun. I think they'll play good teams. You know, it'd be cool to see, you know, I don't think they're going to go see Duke in the championship game. You know, they're probably looking, I mean, they're definitely looking at Gonzaga, Illinois, and then it's kind of all bets are off with that, the other half of the bracket. If they make it into that third place game, you know, maybe Auburn, maybe Xavier. although Xavier looked pretty bad against Wisconsin the other night. So who knows? You know, there's the only, like, even like worst case scenario, just in terms of interesting, fun games to watch, is Arizona, Illinois, San Diego State. That's a pretty good three. That's three pretty good non-conference games, and you're looking at something potentially good as, I mean, this is best case scenario, which won't happen, is Arizona, Gonzaga, Duke.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good.
It'd be a hell of a run.
I picked Gonzaga to win the national title before the season start, and Duke looks like an absolute juggernaut right now with those freshmen. So regardless, Iowa State is going to be tested significantly over there in Hawaii. And just like you can follow Dylan in Austin this week and check out AmesTrib.com for all your Texas Iowa State football needs, you can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, AmesTrib.com for everything you want to see from Maui. I'll be out there for all three games. Should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. Unfortunately, I'm going to be in the air for all of the Texas games, so I will be landing probably in the waning moments of that game. And it'll be interesting to check my phone to see
absolutely
for a lot of different reasons of either text messages, Twitter mentions, messages, and that score. Like, I'm going to be excited to turn my phone on because I'm probably not paying for the Wi-Fi for the 10-hour flight or 6-hour flight, whatever it is.
You're just going to read?
I mean, I am bringing books, but I'm probably going to download some Netflix stuff because it's so much easier just to watch.
Solid.
I downloaded the Emma Stone, what's his face?
Oh, Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill Maniac. Thing. Maniac, yeah. I already got that locked and loaded to watch.
It's on my queue. I haven't checked it out yet, but I've heard it's interesting.
Downloaded some books, too, from the library. Shout out to free Kindle books from the library. Those are big time. So we'll see. It'll be interesting. This is a huge week for Iowa State athletics. You know, we didn't even mention the women's team playing for a WNIT title after a pretty impressive win over Auburn. Where Bridget Carleton went nuts, it sounded like. I wasn't at the game, but just reading Hayes' story. Great win for Fennelly's program there.
Oh, it's huge. And that's kind of what, you know, people talked about coming into this season, that they could be a really improved squad. And I think having some of the reinforcements and some of those players get older, and having Bridget obviously has been solid. It's huge for them. So really solid win.
All right, I think we're over the 30-minute mark here, so let's run through these Twitter questions real quick and get everyone on with their day. Brad Newman asks, is Austin the best Big 12 city to hang out with? If one has to cover a sporting event, is there even a close second?
It's been my impression.
Austin's great. I mean, Fort Worth, Dallas Metroplex is nice, even though it can be a pain to get around, but Austin is now, like, basically traffic hell and expensive hotels now. It's crazy. But, yeah, Austin number one. I think Dallas.
Morgantown's not a great place to hang out, but it's interesting to kind of drive through, especially on a football game day.
Yeah, I haven't stayed in Morgantown since 2013. I always stay in Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. which Pittsburgh is okay. I walked around downtown Pittsburgh last year and was a little underwhelmed on the offerings.
Yeah, I did too. I just kind of walked over by Heinz Field and PNC Park, whatever it is.
I drove by it. Oklahoma City. I like Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
There's a couple of cool places to hang out. I don't particularly like Bricktown. There's another neighborhood that I go to now.
Midtown?
No, not Midtown. It's like a neighborhood. I can't remember what it's called, but
it kind of reminds me of Kansas City a little bit.
Yeah.
In some ways.
I like Oklahoma City. Manhattan to me is underrated. I like Lawrence. Waco's fine, I guess. Lubbock, I'm not a big fan of Lubbock.
This is probably a hot take, but I actually liked Lubbock a little bit more than the reputation. There was just more to it than I thought there would be.
Like what?
I don't know.
Fast food restaurants?
Sure. Yeah. Whataburger?
Overrated.
It's fine. I had that in Oklahoma City after the Oklahoma State game when I found out my flight got delayed a few hours.
People don't, when you're talking about fast food, which I find to be one of the most tedious conversations ever, when people want to rank fast food, Torchy's Tacos, that's my go-to once I'm in the South. It's way better than the burger joints.
Next time.
They do have In-N-Out in Austin, too, I think in Dallas as well, but that's overrated, too. This is all so boring. Why did I bring this up? But Torchy's Tacos, very good. I wish we had them here. What else did I miss? Any other Big 12 cities? I never stay in Stillwater. I always stay in Oklahoma City. Stillwater,
it's a college town.
Yeah. So. It's very Ames-like from when I've driven around it. I don't think I've stayed there since 2013.
I wish Colorado was still in the Big 12.
I wish Colorado was in the Big 12.
I've never been to Columbia.
I was there for the game last year. It was fine. It reminded me of Ames. Nothing. I mean, it's in the middle of Missouri.
Right.
You know, which Ames is in the middle of Iowa, so I don't know that we can, you know, cast aspersions at Columbia. I had a good dinner there, I guess, and a mediocre lunch. I was disappointed with my lunch option.
It wasn't fast food.
Randy Reed, it was not. Can I get the Longhorn Network if I have tall antennas? If those antennas belong to Dish or DirecTV,
absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
Yep,
yeah,
there you go.
That's your only options, right? What MediaCom? Well,
PlayStation View.
PlayStation View.
Do you have a PlayStation View?
Because no Comcast or no MediaCom, right?
Right.
Lee, what's your thought on the half-court trapping? Defense has worked. Will it work in the Big 12 season, and will it stay after Lard returns? I have no idea. Like, I tend to not think that those gimmick defenses are going to work against teams that are prepared for them and, like, have a real Power 5 roster, which Missouri didn't have. I would tend to think not. I don't know that this Iowa State team looks too... I mean, their defensive numbers, like, on KenPom are through the roof. Like, the Missouri game has just skewed everything for a while. But we've seen stuff like this from Iowa State early in seasons before, and it never sticks around in any meaningful way. So I would tend to think we're probably not going to see a lot of the half-court trap. We'll see, though, because if you do have, like, Halliburton at the front of it, he is long and athletic, so maybe it could be effective. But I tend to think not, and I don't think you're going to want Weiler, Babb, or Wigginton to be trapping a ton, potentially getting into foul trouble, but we'll see. Kale, do you think the Wolves are a playoff team with Covington and Saric? I don't know, man. I'm way behind on my NBA this year. I find myself always falling behind more and more early in the season with the football and college basketball overlap. Like, there's just not enough hours in the day for me to watch the NBA.
I watched a little bit of the first half against the Pelicans the other night, and they looked solid then. I know it got closer, but I think there's the pieces there to make it kind of a fun team.
The blackout rules are also a pain in the neck to try to watch Timberwolves. So it's hard to say. I think Thibodeau is going to get fired, and they're going to be rebooting this thing here pretty quick, which is going to be tough to do when you have two max players already on the roster, and Andrew Wiggins is absolutely 1 million percent untradeable. So I don't know what the hell they're going to do other than probably be in the market for a new coach and GM.
Yeah.
Zach Leiter asks, do you think this year's basketball roster, how it sits now with the active players that we have, could beat last year's roster at full strength? For one 40-minute game, I'm going to say no. I'm going to lean to the team that has Wigginton and Lard on it, even though I'm giving up Shayok and Jacobson and Horton Tucker.
Last year you have Donovan Jackson, too.
That's what I'm going to say. So my starting five, which in a 40-minute game I'm probably rolling with, is Jackson, Babb, Wigginton, Lard, Solomon Young.
Solid.
And I've got Zoran Talley.
Yep.
Versus Babb, Talen Horton-Tucker, Shayok, Halliburton, and Jacobson. Yeah, I'm taking last year's team.
For sure.
Which that's not great for this year's team.
No, but when you add in a few of those pieces back, it makes it a lot more intriguing.
Yeah, that's the most disappointing thing about all this is, like, we just don't know. Like, I feel like coming into this season, I had more questions probably than most people about how all the pieces were going to fit, and now we're not going to know until January, probably at the earliest.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe mid-December if all the injuries break right, no pun intended, and you get Talley and Lard back as scheduled. I mean, I think Solomon Young is going to be able to... The most interesting thing is going to be those two suspended guys in Wigginton all coming together, because I think Solomon Young is plug and play. You know what you're getting from him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what lineups he's going to work in. So I'm less concerned about that. But everybody else, is there going to be enough shooting? You know, I wrote about Talen Horton-Tucker being the shooter, the designated shooter for this team this year. I think if he can stand in the corner and bang threes, that's a great sign for them, given his skill level and his skill base. If that's his job, that says good things for the Iowa State offense. So we'll see. They don't play again till Monday against Arizona, I think 8 o'clock local time, Central time. We'll see. Big game on Saturday. Dylan, travel safe to Austin.
You too. To Hawaii.
I will do my best. As always, follow Dylan Munts at Dylan Munts. I'm at Travis Hines 21, AmesTrib.com. We'll have all your Iowa State sports needs. Please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. We truly do appreciate it when you do that. It helps us out. So thank you for listening to the Cyclone Slant podcast brought to you by Ames Ford Lincoln. I'm Travis Hines, and we will catch you next time.